Bahan! Post-quarantine edition. I am Kaveh. I am your host. Joining me today is just a plethora of awesome characters. Let's start first with Mr. Garrison Davis, writer, co-host of It Could Happen Here, journalist, all-around mensch. Garrison, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
And also joining us, we have Dr. Ryan Marino, a returning favorite, ER physician and toxicologist. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Before we get to my post-COVID experience, can we first discuss my mustache?
You have one. Yep.
You know, I was kind of hoping that I would like grow a mustache and maybe like my innate Persianness would come out, like I'd be in touch with my roots. But I look pretty much like a Chicago cop at this point. And it wasn't the look I thought I would have.
You got to get some length and some twirl on it, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want it to be too hip. It, you know, it is fun to have. It's kind of like, I've never done this. I should maybe. But it's kind of what I imagine it's like when people wear sexy lingerie under their clothing. Because I'm like wearing my mask all day at work. And I'm like, people don't know under my mask I have this ridiculous mustache. It's like, it tickles me. I find it to be very fun, you know. But it's not a great look. I acknowledge that. I'm sorry. Our listeners, you're lucky that this is not a visual medium. So guys, I am recovering from COVID. Let me tell you, it's having experienced life both with and without COVID, I can tell you life without COVID is a lot better.
That seems that way. That seems to be the overall trend.
Yeah.
Of the past 2 years.
It's absolutely true. Having COVID was nowhere near as fun as I thought it would be.
And you're vaccinated, right?
I'm vaccinated and boosted.
And it was still terrible.
It was not fun. I'm still not totally back to normal. I'm exhausted still. Like I don't have the energy I used to. Like I'm still gaining that. I'm not quite back to normal yet. That's for sure.
I think that's an important point though, because people who are vaccinated and boosted are getting it and it's terrible, but you didn't end up in the hospital. You didn't end up on a ventilator. You didn't die. And so the vaccines work. That's their whole point. But people seem to be taking this the other way, saying that if you got it when you were boosted, it must mean they don't.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I can't imagine how much worse this would be. It's a little scary, actually, because it was not great, but I always felt pretty confident. I always felt pretty secure that I wasn't going to end up in the hospital. But it still wasn't that much fun. I can only imagine it being so much worse. I mean, these vaccines, they were never meant to keep us from getting sick. It was just a nice surprise that we had a couple of months of, you know, immunity after each shot. I think it's doing what it's supposed to do, which is keeping me from being so sick that I go to the hospital. And I am very grateful, actually. I've never been more grateful. So I feel overall I'm much better. And I don't even want to think about what it would have been like if I did not have these vaccines. Garrison, are you boosted?
I have my booster scheduled. It's been very difficult to schedule here in my city. But yeah, I'm getting it at the end of the month.
And you did pretty well with your first two shots?
Yeah, I mean, my arm was sore, but that was it. That was fine.
And what did you get, Pfizer or Moderna?
I got two Pfizers.
So what are you going to do for this next one? Are you going Pfizer again? Or going
Moderna? I think it's also another Pfizer one, just because there's a lot of Pfizer in this area.
Yeah. What do you think, Ryan? What did you do? Did you mix and match?
No, I got three Moderna. And in retrospect, I mean, looking at the data, it looks like getting your booster with the other one might be a little bit better. But with that being said, I mean, getting three doses is very good for your immune system. The benefit of the booster is that spacing this one dose out, the 6 month period from the other two doses, is that you get a significant immune memory to this, yeah, rather than just having like circulating antibodies. And so while those circulating antibodies were great, like you said, it prevented people from getting sick for a while, having this like immune memory is what's keeping people with this new variant Omicron from getting hospitalized. And it's really all the people who have already received their booster are the ones who are best protected.
Yeah, I agree. And I do think that the evidence is pretty overwhelming at this point. I don't think there's a lot of downside to doing it. We still see it from people on Twitter, doctors in particular, people really gunning for that Joe Rogan spot.
Yeah, in the
hot seat.
I've been doing research the past week into a few doctors who have like media presences with like YouTube channels, large social media followings. I've been watching how they talk around not only like just vaccine hesitancy in general, but also how they've been reacting to what's been going on Joe Rogan's podcast, and how it's like they're trying to stir up a ruckus if they get a spot or something.
Yeah. I mean, that's how you do it. You say Joe Rogan is right. You use those magic words, Joe Rogan is right. And I think that like triggers Joe Rogan then reposting you or retweeting you.
I mean, or, you know, just getting any kind of big drama drummed up, right? If you can say something wrong and controversial that gets you suspended from Twitter, then Joe Rogan will invite you on. That's what happened with Robert Malone, is that he was suspended from Twitter and then Rogan invited him on because, oh, if Twitter is trying to suppress what this guy is saying, we should pay attention to it, right? That's the logic that he's working with. So I've seen a few people try to do the same thing. It won't, you know, again, there's like a law of diminishing returns here on that type of thing. So I don't think it'll continue on like right now to a large degree, but you know, there's always gonna be flare-ups like a few times a year where you'll see a new wave of, you know, like last summer it was Dr. Michael Yeadon was the big disinfo guy. Now it's this guy, Dr. Malone. I'm sure there'll be another one come May or June or whatever. It's all cycles.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's going to be this movement towards that anyway, because it's so lucrative. So for like someone like Robert Malone, who isn't really doing anything, now he is invited to speaking gigs, getting paid all these speaking salaries or speaking fees. I mean, and those kind of people just keep coming out of the woodwork, people who don't really have anything else to contribute other than contrarianism.
A lot of them are also selling their own cures on their own websites. So yeah, it is like, it's
exactly,
it's all a grift. It's all, yeah, it's the same old story told again and again.
Speaking of which, Ryan, it's time for us to start going into business together, man. Just the House of Pod branded vitality pills for vigor.
If you can prescribe me some colloidal silver, I'll be really happy, because I've been planning on dyeing patches of my skin blue. So thinking of getting a blue hand, maybe, just to see what it's like.
What do you think, Ryan? You're a toxicologist. Can we make that happen?
Yeah, I mean, Argyria is the hot new thing.
Right.
All right.
Perfect.
All right. So let's get going. We have our guest is here. I'm going to bring her in just one moment. Real quick, just to make sure we get these plugs in ahead of time. Garrison, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter if you want to see my tweets for some reason, at Hungry Bowtie. And you can follow me on my more substantial work on Happen Here Pod, just the podcast like It Could Happen Here, and the podcast Behind the Bastards, where I occasionally do deep dives into doctors like we just mentioned.
Both shows are amongst my top three, so I highly recommend them. And Ryan, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter at Ryan Marino, one word, RyanMarino, and that is where I spend the large amount of my time posting my unhinged personal opinions.
Some medical background,
some moderately expert hinged opinions.
Yeah.
There's
quasi-hinged. I mean, they're all right. Everyone stay tuned. If you're not already, please follow us at The House of Pod at Twitter. They rate and review us at iTunes. Stay tuned for discussion with Lindsay Ellefson, a journalist and BuzzFeed news contributor. We're going to talk more about fentanyl and all kinds of fun stuff. Stay tuned. Welcome back. We have Lindsay Ellefson, journalist and BuzzFeed News contributor. She has a new article on BuzzFeed News in the science section called Jail Time for an Imaginary Crime. It's almost impossible to overdose just by touching fentanyl, but people are being locked up for it anyway. So I'm really excited to chat with this particular conglomeration of people, and especially you for the first time, Lindsay Ellefson. These guys, who cares about these fucking guys? You're the one that I'm excited about. These guys, I don't really care about. I am excited that we're all here together. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, this is so exciting. I love podcasts, and I've never done a podcast where I could see everyone before.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
It's exciting for me.
Yeah.
It's great to see people's mouths move. It makes it so much easier.
Yeah, the last podcast I did, I think we recorded it, but I was actually at the hair salon, and I was just on the phone, like underneath the big hair dryer and all that stuff, just kind of like saying my answers, and it all just felt very, I mean, I really admired how authentic and scrappy the whole thing was, but this is much, much better than that.
Yeah. I mean, you can't see, but I am getting a pedicure right now.
Oh, okay. I kind of figured that. But like,
I think it helps with my voice. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's the little things that really bring out the joy.
Yeah.
So let's get to it. Let me first start by asking Ryan a question here. It's a basically a yes or no question. And if the answer is no, then the podcast is over and then we all go home. Okay. Ryan, can you overdose by touching fentanyl?
No.
All right. See you guys later.
Podcast is over.
Bye, everyone.
All right.
This is a very interesting urban legend that persists to this day. And there was a story out of, I don't know where yesterday, but a teenager overdosed in a high school on fentanyl, and like three people, including students and teachers, were taken to the hospital for treatment for being near this student. You cannot overdose on fentanyl from just exposure. If you are around someone using fentanyl, if you see someone who has overdosed on fentanyl and try to help them, you are not at risk. Fentanyl does not absorb through the skin in any significant quantity or in any meaningful time frame. The fact that fentanyl patches exist is a thing, but those do not just contain fentanyl, they contain a whole new compound, fentanyl plus something else that absorbs through the skin. And even those still take like 13 hours to reach therapeutic concentrations. So for whatever reason, this myth persists. It's a newer myth. It started in probably like 2016-17, despite the fact that fentanyl was in the drug supply in the 1970s, and there was never a significant concern for this before then. But from my perspective as a medical toxicologist, you do not need to worry about fentanyl unless you are using drugs.
Well, the reason this ties in to Lindsay, your article, is you go through a number of examples, and I'll just read a couple of the headlines that you have in your excellent article here. Deputy nearly dies of fentanyl overdose. That's a headline from Sacramento Bee. Officer exposed to fentanyl and transported to local hospital. That was a press release from the Santa Rosa Police Department. Police officer overdoses after brushing fentanyl powder off his uniform. That was a CNN story. And if you do a quick Google of this, you see just tons of stories.
So many stories like this.
It took me a long time to narrow that down, because that carousel of headlines was a request from the editors to kind of put right up at the top, you know, the punchy headlines that are being used whenever one of these stories comes out. And I went through pages and pages and I read every single one, trying to find like just the right one for my little example section. And the striking thing about every single story was that none of them had a secondary source.
Yeah, I found that amazing. And you mentioned that a number of times in this, that you look to see if there is a doctor's report or if it's questioned. And there never seems to be. Were you able to talk to any of the police officers that experienced this directly?
Yeah, I spoke to one. One officer who is the subject of, I think, the third headline that you wrote about brushing powder off of himself. I spoke to that officer. And then I also spoke to a sheriff whose deputies he said it happened to, a medical first responder and a deputy that he had on his force. And he kind of described that to me. I didn't speak directly to them. And then I also spoke to the press department for the San Diego Sheriff's Department. So again, not directly to an officer involved in one of these situations, but I spoke at length to Chris Green, the Ohio officer, who is kind of the main story in the article.
My favorite one of these was last month with a Tennessee student's vape pen, and a nurse and an officer passing out because they touched this vape pen, which they thought had fentanyl in it, which for one, that's very stupid, obviously, but also it never even had fentanyl. It had a different drug inside it. And so it wasn't even fentanyl. And it was just a wacky story because like every single detail was wrong. And you could like actually track back to like what was accurate. There was enough other reporting on it from multiple agencies. I know that one got pretty popular last month.
The stories are hard. I mean, once you see outside of that prism and you talk to someone who seems to be an expert such as Ryan, not seems to be, is an expert such as Ryan. It's hard. Yeah. Quoted in the story. It's hard to not find these really funny. When you were talking to this officer, like, I mean, what was the vibe you got? I mean, did he really believe it? Did he have doubts about whether or not it could have been real? Was he kind of like, I don't know who knows what could have happened? What was your vibe from that?
Well, first of all, I want to apologize that I was just like blowing air. I'm sure that sounded really awful in my microphone. I saw what I thought was a bug, but it wasn't.
No. Are you on fentanyl right now?
Yeah. Actually, everyone in my apartment building is in extreme danger from the.
It's in the air, didn't you know?
Yeah. And here I am sitting up in my loft. God knows, even closer to the air vents than I should be. It's horrible. I'm so sorry. I can't say how, you know, any person that I interview, like what they're really feeling or what, you know, he really believed happened that day, but he was very adamant. And I spoke to him at length, probably for an hour over the phone one day. I spoke to him through written correspondence. And through all of this, his story since 2017 has pretty much remained the same. And he and the sheriff that I spoke to both were really emphatic, saying like, this is happening, this is true. There's even a quote in the piece where I told him, I was like, listen, here's what all of these medical toxicologists are saying. Here's what doctors are saying. I said, you know, if this could happen to you, why doesn't this happen to nurses? Why doesn't this happen to like more people who use drugs? Like you would think,
Just
being around each other, like why aren't they all just spontaneously overdosing from contact with this? And I said that, and there's a quote in there where he says, well, I don't care what the naysayers have to say. And I thought that was really striking because what I had asked right before that was, how do you feel about these toxicology experts, these doctors? And his response was, I don't care what the naysayers have to say. And I think that kind of told me, you know, this is a true belief. And I also spoke to a lot of toxicologists for the story, some of them kind of like on background, but there's a number of people quoted in the piece as well. And they all said that when they do kind of outreach where they speak to police officers, like the vibe that they get is that they truly believe it. And they told me, at least one person told me that he's found police officers really receptive to the messaging, but that he hasn't noticed any changes since he started doing outreach and speaking to them and trying to bring the message that this doesn't pose them any threat to them directly. And so I don't know if they believe it. That's not for me to say. I'm just an objective journalist, but it's striking how sincere and adamant they were when they were answering the questions, for sure.
Can I ask a very basic question about this? Why is fentanyl lying around in a powder? I know I'm exposing how square I am right now, but like, what's the story?
That's how it's mostly sold. So fentanyl has essentially replaced heroin on the streets in the United States. And so when you used to buy heroin, it came in like these quote unquote stamp bags. They were the little bags that postage stamps are collected in, but they would also have their own stamp on them. And it was a powder, and fentanyl replaced them. Fentanyl can come in a powder. It's like a crystalline solid. So it's very easy to put into a powder, and it's just cut and sold that way. It's also now emerging in like other drugs, and yeah, also in pressed pills. Like people who think they're buying oxycodone on the street, hydrocodone, any of that stuff that they used to be able to buy that was actually a prescription medication is now, even things like Xanax that are totally not related to opioids will be like pressed fentanyl powder. And so that's where that comes from.
It does tie into a whole bunch of like a network of supply chain issues as well, because there's more of it available than a lot of other drugs, and it's being cut. It's being used to cut other drugs. I know last summer there was a series of deaths in Hollywood by pretty actually famous people, because they were doing a lot of cocaine that was cut with fentanyl. And you know, a lot of the time it works out because the amounts can be distributed enough that's not dangerous. But especially if sometimes you'll get like a little bit of it where it's not as mixed in as much, or specifically if you're doing pills, too much can be pressed into one pill. That, you know, usually the pill is seemingly safe, but one may just be like have way too much fentanyl in it for, you know, obviously not cocaine, but other like pill-based drugs. So it's a mixture of like supply chain issues, which makes more fentanyl, less other things, along with a lot of other like interlocking systems that's kind of caused it to be a problem that we're paying attention to more right now.
And I think the main reason to kind of reiterate those points is just that the supply of previous drugs like heroin, prescription opioids, benzos, all of that has been significantly reduced. The United States, the DEA, have done a very good job of destroying poppy fields in initially Afghanistan, but then later northern Mexico. And so there is not really much room for other opioids. And so fentanyl, which is totally synthetic, you can make it in a basement, you can make it without sunlight, you can make it with chemicals you buy on the internet. That's why fentanyl is now replacing all of these drugs, because it's really hard to get any sort of like oxycodone, OxyContin, and even things like Xanax are very hard to get nowadays because of kind of our drug issue in this country. And so that's where fentanyl has filled the gap.
One of the things I find interesting, I'm wondering if in your reporting anyone addressed this, is if it did work so well, you know, via just touch, then why would people inject it?
Yeah, that's the thing, is that you would think there'd be people getting like secondary highs off of other people who are on drugs all the time, and that'd be like a feature of the drug, which obviously isn't the case.
Right. You could just be microdosing by rubbing a couple grains between your fingers, right? Like, what did anyone talk about that?
Yeah, there was a doctor, I think that quote is also really high up in it, where another doctor just said like people would not snort this, people would not inject this if it were possible to just, you know, touch it and feel its effects. And I did ask the police officer that I spoke to, because the story about him that appears in the article is that in 2017 he assisted after a traffic stop was made of a young man in Ohio, who, according to the police report I read, had been known to the area cops for, you know, extensive drug activity. They pulled him over, they found this powder. And then after they arrested him and another suspect who was in the car, they charged them with tampering with evidence because the young men, according to the police report, had tried to get rid of the powder that was in the car through like various means. And so they charged them and they brought them in. And then after that, the officer, about an hour later, like put some of the powder off of his shirt with his own hand. And he said that he overdosed following that, and he was taken to a hospital and treated. And I asked him, you know, if you experienced this effect from touching that little bit of powder that was on your shirt an hour after this arrest and the traffic stop, like, why wouldn't those two suspects who were charged with tampering with evidence for like handling the powder in a very rushed way? It said that there was powder, I think, on a pop can that they had on the dashboard. There was powder on their shoe that was like clearly on the bottom floorboards of the car where they had maybe tried to put it into the carpet or something like that.
Yeah.
And so like they had been handling it in a very fast way when
they were rubbing it in with their hands, I'm sure, into the carpet. Yeah.
Yeah. So if that's the case, and you have them charged with tampering with evidence for like handling this powder, and then an hour later you just rubbed a little bit off of your, why is it that you had this overdose and those two suspects did not have that overdose? And he said that because one of them, Justin, a central character in the article, he said, you know, well, he had been doing drugs for a long time and he built up this tolerance. And I confirmed that he did do drugs. And then he also told me that the other suspect who was arrested that day was also transported to the hospital after the arrest, and had been complaining of breathing problems. But it says pretty clearly there in the police report, and also what the officer confirmed to me, was that that man had asthma. breathing problems and was taken to the hospital for that. But he was very, again, adamant. He was like, well, Justin was known to us as a drug user, and the other one had a breathing problem that same day. And so his explanation for that is that people who do use drugs have built up some sort of tolerance where when they touch it, it's not going to impact them. But then if that were true, like, let's kind of like bounce off of that idea. A person who uses drugs and is maybe in a situation where they also touched a powder or had some, you know, on their own shirt, when they go home and they hug their girlfriend, or maybe their mom washes their sweater for them, why are we not hearing stories of these other people who come into contact with people who use drugs, like falling on the ground, and this happened to them?
And so fentanyl has been also in the street drug supply since at least the 1970s. And I think to get to Lindsay's point here, Justin, the guy who is currently in jail for an imaginary crime, what he's saying is that the other guy who had a breathing difficulty that day, his complaints were shortness of breath, like inability to catch his breath, very consistent with an asthma attack, which goes to the fact that he had asthma. And if you talk about fentanyl, if we give people fentanyl in the hospital and in situations like hospice or the end of their life, to help them not think they're short of breath, to help people not struggle to breathe. So for someone to feel short of breath or say that they are having trouble breathing is literally the opposite of what fentanyl does or what any opioid does.
You know, you bring up this interesting point too, Lindsay, that, like, you know, the loved ones, that it reminds me of another point why I have a hard time envisioning this could happen. Because if you really could, say, put some on your body and contact someone else's body with it and then transfer something to them to give them a high, if that worked, people would definitely have made this a sex thing by now. People would be rubbing it on their genitals and having sex. There'd be a name for it, because people,
like a weapon. I thought you were gonna say, oh, people would definitely be doing like violent sprinkles of powder, but
no, weird sex stuff, Lindsay. Weird sex stuff. That's what it always comes down to. Oh,
don't give people ideas, though.
Yeah. Don't do that, people. Please.
It doesn't work.
I still get Poison Center calls about Colgate on people's genitals.
Really?
Why? To tingle, I guess?
Wow.
Experiment? Is that
why? Thank you for saying that. That really made my day.
Does it hurt them? Does something bad happen to them?
Yeah, what happens?
Well, don't put mint toothpaste on your genitals. It doesn't feel good.
But okay. All right. Get
hurt? Nobody likes it.
I don't know about that.
I've never tried it, but putting toothpaste on your genitals before sex is not a good idea.
You do realize that, like, half of the listeners to the show tonight, as they're brushing their teeth, they're going to look down and be like, maybe I'll just try a little just to see what happens.
Nobody likes it.
Don't do it. We need to start listening to doctors and toxicologists in this country. I think that's the key point here.
That's the key point. Don't put any.
And the one difference is you can absorb the mint flavor elements from your toothpaste through your skin.
That's interesting.
Whether it's like menthol or whatever.
Oh. All right. Well, so let's get back a little bit to the topic at hand. So we've all seen the videos, I think, at this point. If you haven't, it's pretty easy to Google, where like an officer or a TSA agent or somebody.
It's not that easy to Google anymore, because Vimeo took down the biggest one. Vimeo,
which was that San Diego cop one?
They confirmed to me that they took it down for violating their community guidelines. So you can Google it and you'll still find them, but it's not as easy as it was.
Well, interesting. Well, there are these videos where people, you know, they expose, and if you've seen them, the reaction's pretty dramatic. Ryan, you're an ER doctor, you're a toxicologist. You probably have seen what fentanyl overdose looks like. Can you tell us what a real fentanyl overdose looks like?
So a fentanyl overdose will be a gradual diminishing of level of consciousness. You gradually like go out of consciousness. But the most important like clinical parameter to watch for is decreased respiratory status. So people start to slow their respiratory rate. They start to have shallower breaths. And eventually, in a significant overdose, people will stop breathing. And so one of the most common things that I deal with every day is that people want to give Narcan to someone who's just like not doing what they say. They want to give Narcan to someone who is like eyes closed and has normal vital signs. And the real significant distinguishing factor here is the respiratory status. You cannot be overdosed on an opioid if you are breathing and like saturating well from an oxygen standpoint, and also then ventilating, like taking good breaths, breathing in and breathing out.
So along those lines, you brought it up. Let's talk about Narcan a little bit. Do we feel that, if nothing else, the one benefit that's coming from this is that it may be raising awareness of Narcan? Because in a couple of these situations, there's police officers who say that Narcan saved their life. Do you think that this is a positive thing to come out of these stories?
I wish I could say that. I mean, I'm probably the biggest fan of Narcan in the world. I spend like most of my days like fanboying Narcan, trying to get other people to like Narcan. But people who give themselves Narcan inappropriately and hoard Narcan so that they can use it on themselves, like if the situation arises, that's problematic for me. And so in the real world, in patients who come to the ED and patients who are seen pre-hospitally, my biggest concern is that the Narcan is being withheld because there's a concern for someone responding to need it more than the person who may or may not be overdosing. And so there's really no downside into giving someone who's like unresponsive on the ground Narcan. And so I would say for anyone, whether they're a first responder or not, if you see someone on the ground and they're unresponsive, you should try to give them Narcan when you're calling 911. So, yeah.
You've also raised the concern before that you're worried that this fear might lead people to not doing CPR on patients when they need to, because they're worried about doing CPR on a patient and then exposing themselves to fentanyl overdose just by doing the CPR.
Yeah, and this is not just something that I have personally seen, but something that other people have told me about. But for someone who is overdosing, like time is very important. As I said before, the respiratory drive is what's affected by overdose. So people lose their oxygenation status, they lose their ability to clear carbon dioxide. And so those have very severe detrimental effects on the body. And so you can immediately begin to lose brain cells, lose heart cells, that kind of thing. It's almost like a stroke in terms of kind of like how time matters, or a heart attack. And so I have personally seen in situations where someone is overdosed that the people responding are concerned to get close because they're worried that fentanyl is involved and that fentanyl could be contagious to them and delay the overdose in terms of getting PPE on, getting additional protective recovery, and even like closing doors and blocking people off. And that's what concerns me most. We don't need people dying from opioid overdoses. So,
yeah. Well, let me ask you guys a question then. I would like to hear everyone's thoughts. What do we think is happening then? In these situations, if it seems that medically it's not a plausible way to get these reactions via overdosing, via touching fentanyl, what is happening in these cases with these police officers that are coming into contact or near fentanyl?
When I was working on the story, I asked that to every single person that I spoke to. And obviously the answers from the police officers that I spoke to was like, well, we're overdosing. But then obviously when I spoke to doctors and toxicologists, like pretty uniformly, no one would say this is a panic attack, right? Because it's irresponsible to kind of like just like diagnose something without actually having been there. Yeah. That being said, where the media diagnoses them or like says that they're overdosing without ever seeing a toxicology report. But whatever, everyone who spoke to me exercised extreme caution and said, it sounds like a panic attack. It presents like a panic attack. We have studies that are shown in the story that say that officers say that they're entering the field with this increased fear of fentanyl. A lot of law enforcement people reached out to me after the story published to let me know that they had personally undergone trainings that, you know, explicitly told them, like, this is a huge risk to you. A person who said that they worked in corrections told me that that fear that she was instilled with in that training actually followed her to a music festival, and a friend of hers saw what looked like a baggie of something on the ground, and she said, you can't touch it, you can't pick it up, if it's fentanyl we're all gonna die. And this was a person who works in law enforcement, and she was off the clock, like, at a music festival trying to have fun, and she was, like, so overcome with fear that she started screaming at her friends. So what everyone told me when I asked them that was, it looks like a panic attack, it presents like a panic attack, a shortness of breath, having the, you know, like, still kind of like the wherewithal to announce that something's happening, you know, like, it, none of the things that, like, line up with what we know to be true about opioid overdoses, which is how Ryan described it earlier.
The other thing that is definitely a contributing factor would be just the nocebo effect, which is, like, you know, people are pretty familiar with the placebo, and then the reversed version is obviously something that has, you know, psychosomatic negative effects, where you take something that you think is going to hurt yourself or is going to harm you, and then you basically make those symptoms. And between a panic attack and the nocebo, then yeah, that's a decent indicator of what's going on, because it seems to be more likely it's that than they're actually overdosing.
And to finish this off, I mean, I think the nocebo effect is my number one like speculation, which it's purely speculation, but if you're having a reaction from a nocebo effect, which is a panic reaction because you think that something can harm you that cannot harm you, and you get physiologic effects, giving yourself naloxone is the placebo that then reverses that. And so that's why in all these stories where people get naloxone, their lightheadedness resolves, their, like, heavy breathing resolves, all of that. I mean, I think in terms of what Lindsay said, she was able to talk to all these people, and the most important thing, I think that I took from this was that they said they were not willing to consider any alternatives. They were not willing to consider that this could have been an anxiety reaction. They were not willing to consider the nocebo effect because they're so hard, they're so brave, and, like, all of that. And obviously, I mean, like, I don't know how people feel, but, like, I'm a ER doctor. I go and treat COVID patients every day for the past, like, 2 years, and I would never call myself so brave. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you are. I mean, I'll say it. You're pretty brave.
But I'm not brave. Like, I try to avoid every interaction I can.
We've talked about this a lot on this show. We've talked about it a lot personally, Ryan and I. We don't like the term hero being applied to healthcare workers for a lot of different reasons. One, because it's probably not accurate. But then two, it's also part of this whole, like, branding process to, like, be like, oh, they're heroes, they can do this, whatever. Just put them in, have them do whatever we need them to do and sacrifice whatever they need them to sacrifice. That's what they do. So there's a lot of things about that I don't love.
What I don't love most, though, is that people saying that doing their job is bravery. Like, there's a difference between me showing up to work and being in a pandemic. That's not something I signed up for yet. But like, I can see people who are infectious, and I'm not brave. That's my job. And so for, like, the police to say that they're so brave, or law enforcement to say that they're so brave for, like, being in, pulling over a vehicle that has an unknown powder in it, and then four people go to the hospital and none of them were in the vehicle, that doesn't make any sense to me. That's not bravery.
I do think it's important for us to keep trying to do outreach with the police. One, because, you know, I still like going to San Diego and I want to be able to do that. But two, because the real risks to them are from COVID. I mean, we talk about, like, what's killed more cops in the last 2 years than anything, by far, it's COVID. And that's the kind of thing we have to keep pushing to them to save them, to help them. One last thing I want to ask is, does anyone here have Narcan? Do any of you guys carry Narcan or have Narcan accessible? I'm seeing everyone's hand. I'm assuming, yeah. Wow, hands. Okay.
I have Narcan in my car, in my work bag, in my overnight bag, and in my coat.
Garrison, how did you get it? What was the process you went through to get it?
I think someone gave it to me.
And Lindsay?
Same. I've written about before. I think in 2019, I did a story that was like, we have all these free trainings around the major cities in the U.S. and we have the availability of lay people to be carrying this. And we have the ability for people to know how to use this and what it does and why isn't anyone learning about this? And that was a story I did forever ago. And I think I had some after that. And then I think someone gave me some more. And I've never had to use it. Never used it.
Well, I feel bad that I don't have any. All right. You shamed me. I'll get some. You gave me some, Ryan?
Yeah. Send me your pharmacy and I'll send you a prescription.
All right. Okay. I'll do that. Okay. Well, let's close up at this point. Thank you guys. This was really fun and educational for me. I really appreciate having all of you here. You all have a really interesting perspective and I'm really grateful that you shared it with me and all our listeners. So let's get all the plugs in. Lindsay, let's start with you. Where can people find you?
Oh my God. I didn't know you were going to ask me that.
Plug, please.
You should just look up the article, but you should just look up me if you go to Lindsay Ellefson, LINDSEY, ELLEFSON, .contently.com. That's the hosting thing that I have for my portfolio. I have to fix it. If you know what, if any web developers are listening to this, I need to buy the rights to lindsayellefson.com and I need to make my own portfolio because I'm just using some janky third party thing. You'll see it. lindsayellefson.contently.com and you'll see what I'm working with. And then on all social medias, you can find me at Ellefson, ELLEFSON, but the O is a zero because there is a woman in, I think, Idaho who has just been bogarting at Ellefson for years.
Uncool.
Will not listen to my pleas.
Nothing good comes out of Ohio.
I think it's Idaho. Don't disparage the good
people. Wow.
Ohio.
Idaho.
Don't pretend there's any difference between the two, Ryan. Come on. It's all Ohio.
Idaho's like 700 miles away from me.
I know.
You're at Ellefson and you're listening to this. Time's up. I'd like to have the social handle. What I'm gonna plug. I'm gonna put the pressure on
her
campaign to get
her the handle.
I'm doing things. I'm publishing things. I deserve it. Anyway, that's where you can find me.
Let's offer some sort of trade. I will allow her, if she wants, to come on the show with any guest she wants. That's what I will offer her in exchange for your handle. All right, Ryan, what about yourself? Tell everyone again where they can find you.
So I'm at Twitter at Ryan Marino, RyanMarino. But I think everyone should follow Lindsay. I mean, this reporting is incredible. Like, don't get me wrong. I do not support Erin Brockovich, but this is like Erin Brockovich level reporting.
There's more coming, you guys.
All right. Erin Brockovich is not a good person.
Can we talk about that? What's the story?
Lindsay Ellefson is a good person. She is like helping people.
She's brave. Let's say it. She's brave.
I'm brave.
Wait. So
I don't care. I'm brave.
Yeah, you
go. I will go on the record and say Erin Brockovich is not a good person, and she can fight me if she wants.
I like Ryan post two glasses of wine by the end of the podcast. All right, Garrison, where can people find you?
You can follow me on the social medias at Hungry Bowtie and Behind the Bastards and It Could Happen Here for my audio content.
All of them are fantastic. All of you guys are fantastic. I really appreciate it. Thank you to Nadine for help with production. And if you guys haven't already, please rate and review us at iTunes. And thank you all so much for joining us today. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult a physician or other qualified healthcare provider for your specific healthcare needs or concerns. The opinions expressed on this podcast do not represent the opinions of our employees. Details in the podcast have been changed so that patient identification is not possible.